Your portfolio is what is what shows that you have the potential. So the truth is, people will judge you on how you look
or how your work looks.
By the time I open the portfolio and I'm seeing white text on yellow background or yellow text on white background, I begin to question, does this person understand accessibility? Don't copy other people's portfolio. The original, and only put things that you worked on, and make sure that you know your work that you're doing. They say it doesn't make perfection. Practice makes improvement. You know, people come into design and they think it's the easy tech role to do because it's not coding. The truth about UI design is you have to design a lot to be good at it. Don't give an F about what people are going to say at some point, and just share your stuff.
My name is Esther Adebayo, and on my tech journey with Esther, I sit down with tech folks to talk about how they've been able to handle rejections, overcome obstacles in their careers, and really cut through the hype. From coding mistakes to battling rejections, balancing work life, and even doing phenomenal things, my guests will share everything raw and real on my tech journey with Esther. New episodes drop every week, so you don't want to miss out. Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of the Tech Journey with Esther. Today I have a special guest with me. I have Nabel with me today. Hi Nabel, how are you doing? Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Hi Esther, thank you for inviting me as well.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I'm so happy to be here.
Same here. I'm very happy to, you know, just have you come chat and tell us more about your story and your journey. So before we get started, I would like to introduce Nabel officially to us, the audience, because she's doing so many amazing things. So let's dive into her bio before we get started. Nabel is a seasoned software product designer, UX UI, and front-end developer with a passion for enhancing technology through design. She excels in solving complex design challenges to create intuitive, beautiful, and inclusive user experiences. Beyond her professional work, Nabel is a dedicated writer, mentor, and educator. She shares valuable design insights on platforms like Medium and guides aspiring designers through ADP List mentorship. When she's not immersed in design, Nabel loves exploring diverse cultures, traveling, and listening to her favorite K-pop boy band, Stray Kids. So welcome to the show, Nabel. You know, when I was reading your bio, I think I've heard of Stray Kids, but I had to literally go on YouTube to listen to one of their songs. I was like, okay.
I hope you liked it.
It was different, but the beats, I couldn't understand what they were saying, but the beat sounded really upbeat and really nice. So I was like, okay, this is new.
I think I'm being influenced because I live in Asia, Southeast Asia, so a lot of people listen to K-pop. So yeah, kind of got into it. But I still like my Afrobeat. I still listen to my Afrobeat from time to time.
Are you a K-drama person as well? You love Korean movies?
Yeah. I'm a K-drama person as well. And currently I'm watching the series called When the Phone Rings. And I'm going crazy that there's no new episodes this week.
I think I used to be a K-drama person. I'm sure you know when Boys Over Flowers was all like raining and everything. That was when I got into K-drama, but I haven't watched any in a while. But I've gotten some recommendations, but we'll see.
Okay.
All right, before we get into the conversation, let's play a fun game together. It's a game of this or that. So I'm gonna give you two options and you pick which one is your preference. So, movies or TV shows?
Movies.
Okay. What's the last movie you watched that you really liked?
When the Phone Rings. When the Phone Rings.
Is it a movie or a TV show, though? It's a movie.
It's actually a complete series. Okay. So, it's like about 12 or 16 episodes. But, yeah.
Okay. All right. Dogs or cats?
Cats.
Interesting. Do you have a cat?
At home, I do. I have one. Its name is Boomy.
Boomy.
Yeah.
interesting.
Yeah, it's an orange cat.
Orange cat? I've never seen an orange cat. Are you serious?
It looks like Garfield. Oh, well,
true. I'm sure it looks like Garfield. True, true. Texting or calling, which do you prefer?
Calling. I prefer to talk than to text. I feel like my tone of voice gets lost when I text.
Interesting. Music while working or silence?
Music while walking, but the truth is, maybe after 5 minutes, I start dancing and stop working.
So maybe silence is better.
Maybe silence is better, but I still prefer music while working.
Okay, same. I think it really depends on the kind of work I'm doing. If I'm really focused, I'll probably just want silent. But if it's something that maybe I'm writing code and just like, okay, let's just have some music in the background. Figma or Adobe XD?
Figma.
I guess that would be the answer. And finally, tidy desk or organized chaos?
Tidy desks.
Interesting. I'm somewhere in between.
I know where everything is.
I'm somewhere in between.
To be a particular spot.
Sometimes,
I'm too organized.
Sometimes my desk will just be a bit messy, but I'm like, okay, I just know where everything is when I need it. It's just, and sometimes it's clean, but that's fine. Let's get into the conversation about. I know you live in Bali, and when you said so, I was like, wow, Bali is like one of the places that is on my bucket list. Like, I've seen pictures from Bali, and it's very like boho inspired, Asian, and all of that. So you're living the life, right? How is it living in Bali? Like, what's the experience and the whole culture like in Bali?
Okay, let me put this out there. Newsflash. So if you're looking at Bali from Instagram photos, I'm going to say that you'll be disappointed by a lot of things, because you know, content creators usually they'll show you the nice spots, the nice places and everything. But just after there, you know, you'll be seeing something else. Maybe when you want to visit Bali, anytime you're ready, go online and check Instagram reality versus Instagram Bali photos or Bali reels, and then
you'll see the real Bali.
But okay. Let me talk about my experience living in Bali. It's been 2 years now. So August this year made it 2 years that I've been living in Bali. I actually moved here for work, so I got a job. And with the company, with a Singaporean company. And so as at the time when I was negotiating, they wanted me to work from the Bali office, because this is where the whole tech team is, right? So I did try to negotiate and like, can I work remotely from where I was? You know, I don't want to move. But as at the time I thought about it again, like, why not just move to Bali, right? So I packed up my life and I came over here, and it's been 2 years. And I would say that it's been amazing. It's a very lovely place to stay. A lot of rich culture here. You know, there's so much of religions, whether you're Christian, Muslim, Hindu, Buddhism, and everything. You know, it's very accommodating, and Bali is like a very hospitable place. So I kind of enjoy it here. I don't know what else to say about Bali, but these are my own personal experience. Like, it's a good place to stay. If you're looking for nature, if you're looking for just relaxation, this is where you should
be. Did you face any significant, I don't know if I should call it culture shock, or like, what was the surprising thing in terms of maybe culture or just Bali itself that maybe surprised you from where you were moving? Did you move from Nigeria? Where did you move from?
Okay, so I was living in Jakarta.
Where's
so
that?
My family and I live in Jakarta. Jakarta is the capital city of Indonesia, right? So I was living in Jakarta, and I've lived in Jakarta for like 3 years. I schooled in Jakarta. And so I would say, compared to Bali, right, Bali is more an international place. So you get to see a lot of foreigners, people from different countries and stuff. And here locally they call it bule, back at home we call it oibo. Right? So you see a lot of foreigners, so it's very international. Okay. Space, and so I would say it's a free place, and I didn't really feel like shocked about certain things. I feel like the only thing that for me was kind of surprising is that in front of every house there's like a, I mean, in regards to their culture, right, there's like a small shrine or something in everyone. Yeah, but there's they have these festivals and stuff that they do, which is like their culture and things, the tradition. I feel like those are the new things that for me, but been in Indonesia for a while. Okay. Maybe just like get used to it, basically, because it's not something you see, like,
yeah, it's in, not something in the city, popular, right? So, in our side, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I feel like those are the only like new things, but not necessarily shocking or culture shock for me. Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. I'll still want to visit Bali, and hopefully I get the Instagram. All right, so Nabel, you built an impressive career as a product designer. So what made you interested in that whole industry, like the product design path? What sparked your interest in product design?
So I would say that for design generally, right, the reason why I got into design was basically out of a need, out of a necessity. So this is like way back in like 2016, I can't really remember, but I remember my mom, you know, I was done with school, right? I studied computer science, by the way. And so I was done with school. I was holding this big degree. And my mom wanted to do, I think, a program. So she wanted some flyers, right? This is, you have a computer science graduate at home. I couldn't even make it for her. Cause
oh, my God.
So I had to take the stuff, and I was going from cyber cafe to cyber cafe looking for a designer to create the flyer for her. Back then, and I remember going to this place where the lady who was, you know, talking to me in terms of like the business and stuff, I didn't really like the whole interaction and attitude, and so I got angry, like, I'm going to learn this design,
do it myself.
So, like, what's this rubbish thing that I'm doing myself. So to be honest, that was basically how I started, like, I got into graphic design in general. So I started my career with graphic. I learned graphic design. I was doing graphics for a couple of years. And, you know, 2019, I left the country to do my master's. So I left Nigeria to do my master's. And during my master's study, that was when I was like, I want to do something more. Like, I didn't want to do just communication design, designing flyers and banners and stuff like that. I was working though, but I wanted to do something more. So for me, since design is already something I'm used to and I'm good at, I felt like, okay, product design is the next line of thing that I could, you know, pivot into. So I felt like that I want something more was really the push into product design. I did try coding. You know, everybody that gets into tech sometimes
you dabble into coding.
You do data science, you know, you try different things. And I did try different things, but for me, I felt like when I was doing all those things, I didn't feel like, okay, I'm really enjoying this thing, it's really exciting for me, and I didn't see it easy for me. So I felt like design to me comes easy. It's still work, it's still difficult sometimes, but for me, I felt like it comes easy for me. The creativity is there, you know, and stuff. So I felt like design is just the thing for me. So I think that's my path into product design.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, when you were talking and you mentioned that maybe you didn't enjoy the conversation between you and the person that was supposed to do that graphic design for like your mom's event, it's like sometimes the frustration that we face just kind of pushes us into the path that we should really take. I think that frustration was like the seed for you at that point. It was like, oh, like, I'm going to do this myself. And somehow you got into graphic design and eventually you've evolved into product design. So how long would you say been a product designer for?
So for product design, I would start counting maybe from 2020. So 2020 until
now,
that's about
4 years.
Okay. But for design in general, I've been designing since 2017. So I started like graphics. Like I said, I started graphics. I started working and Even when I went for my NYSC, I was posted to like, it's so crazy the story. Like, I was posted for my NYSC, and when I was posted for the PPA, they posted me to a printing press to go and work as a graphic designer.
Did they have any idea like, that you've been doing it?
it's just crazy, right? So I've been doing design since 2017, but I would say product design, like UI, UX in general, I start counting from 2020 because that was when I started working like in a company as a UI UX designer.
Wow, in 4 years, you've built like a really impressive career. Like, you've done so much in 4 years. And like, I like the fact that you try your best to document your whole journey, your process, especially Medium. I was reading your Medium articles, and one of the ones that really, you know, stood out to me was, I think, one of your first articles where you wrote about job hunting for UI UX designers. And you mentioned that people telling me no is one of the things that I have encountered most in my life. That was one of the things you wrote there. So do you remember like a recent job rejection that you had for product design?
I have a very fresh one in my memory. I have a very fresh one in my memory. So it's not a job, it's actually for something else.
Thank you.
So it was for a speaking engagement, right? So the rejection came. Now, I've gotten a lot of rejection for so many different things in life, and I'm used to people telling me no. But when I was reading the rejection, they specifically said that my stuff wasn't of quality, right? So that really hooked me. Like, those words were like, are you serious? This is
You said that's recently.
Yeah, that's very, it's very, very recent. It's like a month or two ago. Like, it's very recent. So it was like, my stuff is not of quality. This is, and then I think after that, few weeks or something, I got the acceptance to speak at Medium.
Yeah, I said that.
Medium Day. So Medium was having a conference, and you know how that rejection is just like, you're not of quality, and you know the feeling and everything. I felt like that just smelled everything. But it's really fresh in my memory because I still remember that those words. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, maybe I'm not doing enough. I'm not doing it well, so I need to get better.
Yeah. Yeah. I can really imagine. I know rejection is not easy at all. It's not easy at all, especially when you feel like you're doing your best and you feel, you know, there's a point you get to that you feel like you're so good and you're bringing your best to the table. Like, you're just feeling yourself. And when you get that rejection and it still feels like your best is not good enough, if it's not properly handled, you can really get depressed or you start getting discouraged. So for me, when I face rejections, I think the first, if I get an email that is like rejection, maybe for a job or whatever, I just close it and just take time to, you know, and you know, I move on. I think I don't let rejection linger on for too long for me. I just move on because I'm just like, it's just no, you know, another opportunity will still come. And I see rejection as a redirection, so to say. So for you, it's interesting that at least something else came, you know, the Medium Day came and you were able to give your talk, and I saw all the good feedback that you had, and it was really nice.
I felt like the rejection was also like a wake-up call. Sometimes we get comfortable.
True.
I feel like maybe, you know, I'm good at this stuff, right? What I've put in is okay. It's enough to get me through. So I feel like it was a wake-up call to, you know, step back a little bit, reevaluate myself, reevaluate, you know, the way that I put my application together. And it's... like I said in my article that you read, it's really good that you said that to me. It's, for me, rejection is like a redirection, right? So if that didn't work out, you know,
something else will work out. And I see it's very interesting that you have like a front-end background, because I know that it's not common to see product designers that also know how to code. Even though you know how to code, it's something that you do not enjoy and you decided to go into product design. So have you seen that maybe your knowledge for coding or knowing how to code, how has that really impacted the kind of designs that you do? Because I know that designers that probably do not know how to code, they bring out wicked designs, and wicked designs in the sense that designs that will stress the developer, and the developers will just be like, oh my god. But for them, like, they are coming up with very creative designs, and you know, on the other side, the engineers are having to do so much work. So have you seen that knowing how to code, you know, impacts the way you think about design?
So for me, knowing how to code makes me, I don't know if I'll say makes me to have more, but it makes me to be more empathetic towards the developers that I work with. It helps me to work better with the developers. So if they're explaining something and saying, hey, this thing, how are we going to implement this? This is not going to work, or this is not feasible. I can at least, maybe I don't know how to code it 100%, but I can at least empathize with them and understand that, look, this fancy thing I'm doing that is so easy to do, not maybe not so easy to do, but you know, on Figma it's like drag, drop, pinpoint, and you know, add auto layout and stuff, and you do your animation and it's looking nice, right? How do you bring it to life? Now I feel like having a coding background helps me to be more empathetic towards my developers, and at the same time understand them, right? So if we're having like maybe discussions around what we want to implement, I could be able to understand. Now there's another thing I want to say, knowing how to code also helps me because I've worked on technical products. So I've built like API dashboards, yeah, in the past, and you know, dashboards for developers and very technical products for developers. So if I didn't have that coding background or that, you know, background, I think it would have been more challenging for me to work on those kind of products. So
yeah.
For the designers who are listening, I know that there's been this discord about whether you should learn to code or not. The truth is, just go and learn everything. No knowledge is a waste. If you have the opportunity to,
it makes sense. Just go and learn everything. It makes sense. It totally makes sense, because that was going to be my next question. Like, do you think it's important for designers to know how to code? But I think it's important. I started as a UI designer, funny enough, and you know, just using Figma to create landing pages, designs, and you know, mockups. But
yeah,
then knowing how to code, I think it just takes it a step further, right? After designing,
further,
then knowing how to implement. So I definitely agree that as a designer, you don't necessarily need to be an expert developer, but just understanding the basics, like, okay, this is the CSS style that, you know, will be useful for this thing I've done, and knowing, let's say, knowing the extent to which you want to animate so many things, because as a designer, it's easy to just feel like, oh, when you click, this thing should just spin and
everything should be shaking, everything should be moving.
But then if you have a developer or engineering experience, or even, you know, knowledge of this development, you'll be able to tell that, okay, maybe this thing is not necessary. So it just helps you think better with the engineers that you're designing the screens for. So that makes sense.
Absolutely.
Let's go into product design for those that are looking to get started. One of the things that I know a lot of people, like potential employers, look out for those that, you know, they want to hire as product designers, is portfolio. Like, you have to have a strong portfolio that stands you out, because product design is also a very competitive industry, like so many great product designers out there. So what's one advice, or advice, it can be more than one, but what advice do you have to anyone looking to create a strong and impressive portfolio?
How many resumes have you sent out with zero response? Or maybe you're getting interviews, but you just can't seem to land a job. I've been there, and I know it's so frustrating, right? But the good news, I've created a toolkit to change all of that for you. Introducing the Get a Job Toolkit, your step-by-step guide to finally land your dream tech job. Inside, you get 3 resume and cover letter templates, a job tracking sheet, 100 plus interview paraphrases, reach out messages to recruiters, and a LinkedIn optimization checklist. I created this toolkit because I know how hard applying to jobs can be. So whether you're just starting out your career or making a career switch to tech, this will save you so much time and stress. Click the link below to grab your toolkit and let's get you hired.
I would say when it comes to portfolio, personality differs and skills differ. The way that I would want my portfolio to look might not be the way that you want your portfolio to look. And so my first advice is, if you're for any designer listening to me, the one thing you don't want to do when building your portfolio is copy someone else's work. So what I mean by that is, you know, you see something that's nice. I know that Figma community is there, you know, you see some portfolio templates and everything, and a lot of people will just go there and duplicate and maybe change the color, you know, from blue to black and green to yellow. And the next thing you know, you're already putting it on your, uploading it on your Behance, and it's like, it's your work. So that's something that you do not want to do. Originality and authenticity will help you a lot. The second thing is know your stuff. No matter how, a lot of people will tell you, oh, UI UX is saturated. There's so many people, everybody's doing UI UX. Know your work. Because when it's time for, you know, people say that there's a lot of UI UX designers, but when it's time to look for somebody that can do the actual work, I'm not talking about bluffing online or making noise online or posing as, you know, social media designer, but I'm talking about doing the actual work. Like, you're giving something to do and you deliver it. Sometimes it's really difficult. I don't know if you've been in the position to hire for UI UX designers, but for people that have been in that position, they would agree with me that, you know, sometimes it's really difficult to find that person that can actually do the stuff, right? So know your work, because that will also make you to stand out. Now, don't copy other people's portfolio.
Yeah, it's so important.
The original, and only put things that you worked on, and make sure that you know your work that you're doing. Now, for some people, they might follow up a question and say, okay, I don't have any experience, right? How do I create a portfolio when I don't have any experience? I've not worked anywhere. Personal projects. You can do a personal project. You can volunteer to even a startup. It might not even be paid. I don't advise anybody to do unpaid work. But, you know, just for the sake of, let it be that I have this experience, or let it be that I have something to show for. Because your portfolio is what... is what shows that you have the potential. So you can do personal projects. And when you're doing those personal projects, don't just do, I'm redesigning UBA Bank because I want to change the red to
blue.
Green. don't do that. I'm redesigning Piggy Vest because I want to change their blue color to purple. No, don't do it for the visual sake, right? Find a problem, a real problem that, you know, you might encounter. It might even be something that you encounter on a daily, that you're using the application or you're using the product and you encounter this problem. Use that as a point and then go and create a solution out of it. So that way you tell a better story, because in your portfolio is basically a combination of case studies, right? Case studies of what the things that you've worked on. And so for you to write a case study, you have to literally write a story of your solution, how you came about it. So having something that, you know, maybe a pain point that you also feel or people around you feel, you can tell a better story around that than just, oh, I redesigned UBA because, you know.
Totally.
Because the design is both UI and UX, right? The user interface part is great, but also understand the reason why you are even changing the interface from looking a certain way to another way in the first place. So I think those would be my advice to anybody who's looking to, you know, get into product design.
It's really good advice. I think I like the part where you said don't copy, like be original. It's important, because a lot of times you just see people trying to mimic one-on-one. You know, there's a place for inspiration. You can get inspired and you like different sections of a particular portfolio or, you know, particular someone's work, and you want to like implement certain elements, but it shouldn't be one-on-one. You know, that's where you also have to flex your it shouldn't just be you see this, you take and you just duplicate, literally copy pasta. You, as a designer, it's important to bring your originality. I think that's what employers want to see. that originality, that fresh perspective that you bring. And speaking of portfolios, also for product design, where is, like, okay, someone wants to create a product design portfolio, where should the portfolio live? Should it be on Behance? Should it be on Dribbble? Should it be on a website? Like, where should the portfolio live?
For anyone who is going to listen to me or hear this answer, this is my personal opinion. Now, I know that people have biases, right? Employers have their own bias and other people have their own bias. Some people will say that they want you to have your own website, that it's more professional, right? But for me personally, I feel like where you house your portfolio is not really important. The most important thing is the content of the portfolio. So I've been in a position where I'm interviewing or hiring for designers. I've seen designers who use PDF portfolios that are housed in Google Drive, Behance portfolios, Dribbble portfolio, personal websites, you know, Framer portfolios, you got Notion portfolio. Yeah, so there's so many places that you can house your portfolio. The most important thing is make sure that the content is wow. Make sure that the content, immediately someone goes there, is like, okay, this person knows what they're doing. So it's not because you can have a personal website and it doesn't make any sense. You can have a personal website and there's nothing there. You see people's websites, you click on it, you're reading the case studies, learning if some text, and you're like, are you serious? You know? I hope I'm really passing the message.
No, it makes sense.
But the most important thing is the content of the portfolio. So for me, it doesn't really matter where you house it. If you have the funds, you have the resources to go and buy your own domain and, you know, create it and have your website, it's great. It's lovely. Do that. If you're not there yet, because I know that a lot of upcoming designers or that are just starting out, you know, they might just want to use Behance or Dribbble. It's okay to use those platforms as well. The most important thing is, I also have some of my works on Dribbble and Behance as well, like complete case studies for those people who want to check. You can go ahead and check. So you can use all those platforms. I remember when I was starting out, I started using Behance. Yeah. Currently, I use Framer as my portfolio. I use Framer because it's a better tool and everything, but you can use Notion as well. You can use anything, but make sure that the content of the portfolio is quality. Yeah.
And you mentioned that you've been in a position where you're hiring designers, or at least reviewing designers to be hired. So what would you say are some of the things that tick? I don't know if you can still hear me. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
It seems like
it was a little glitch in the network. It froze a little bit, but we're back on.
All right, that's fine. So what would you say are the things that tick for you, like things that you see on a portfolio that you feel like, this person, this designer knows what they are doing, and the things that you see on other portfolios, they are just like, nah, this person, no, we are not interested. So what are the things that you look out for on a portfolio that, you know, yeah, like impressed?
Okay, so since this one is personal to me, so because I'm a human being, right, I will have my own bias. For some other person, definitely, they might have their own preference as well. So personally, the things I look out for, first, visual.
Okay.
So the minute I open the portfolio, the truth is people will judge you on how you look.
Definitely, first impressions, right?
So By the time I open the portfolio and I'm seeing white text on yellow background or yellow text on white background, I begin to question, does this person understand accessibility, you know, a lot of things. So visual is important, that's one. And then if, aside from the visual, I could see a case study or something that could hook me and say, okay, let me go ahead and read this stuff. Not necessarily read it in depth, but maybe skim through. Mm-hmm. And that's when I mentioned Lorem Ipsum text. That's to tell you that I actually read, like, go through, okay, what is the problem this person is trying to solve? And, you know, the befores, the after. So if I'm looking at your work, I'm just seeing it's okay to have pretty pixels, but am I seeing a before? Am I seeing an after? You know, if you're redesigning something, something, you know, you're telling a little bit of story. I think those are the things that personally I did look out for. So visual and your storytelling, and you know, because I feel like those, the portfolio is just one tiny bit of it, because when you start working with someone, you get to know, like, this is just my opinion, I feel like the portfolio does not tell all the story about, you know, the skill of somebody. So sometimes there are people that it might not be looking exceptionally wow like that, but you know, I could give them a chance and be like, oh, this person has some potential here with the way they've laid out their work or something like that. So those are the things that I do look out for.
I agree as well.
So visual is important.
Yeah, I agree as well. I know that
storytelling.
Yeah, storytelling is important. First impressions for me matter a lot. I remember one time I was looking to hire someone, a freelancer, right? And this person, and I also feel like portfolios also can be, like, people can just be fluff. People can really package, right? People can package a lot in their portfolio, and then when it gets to the work, you're like, this person isn't all that, right? That was how it was for someone that I hired as a freelancer. Her portfolio was like on point, you know, on the particular. I think she was a virtual assistant, so her portfolio was on point. But when it came to the work, like, okay, do the work that you said you can do. It's like she couldn't really do it. So I think it's important that even as designers or anyone working on a portfolio to ensure that whatever you're putting on your portfolio, you can defend it. Don't try to over magnify what you've done and then they give you the work and you can't do it, or you're performing subpar. Like, ensure that you're giving your best and you're telling, your portfolio is telling at least a true story, is a true reflection of what you can do. Yeah. So finally, for people that are looking to get started in product design, what books or resources or courses do you think would be helpful to them? What was helpful for you, and what do you think would help them on their journey as well?
For anyone who is looking to start out, let's say whether you're in tech or you're not in tech, or you're coming from a different discipline or anything, I would say the first thing you need to do or understand is know yourself, like how you learn. So for some people, they learn in a group, you know, they like to be physical in a boot camp and stuff like that. And then there are people who they can take a course, they can be dedicated, like myself, maybe 3 weeks, 1 month, and they go through it and they get the knowledge from there. So if you understand yourself, like how you learn, that will help you to make a better decision. So because I might recommend and say, go and do Google UX course, it worked for me, or go and join Interaction Design Foundation because their courses are very good. But at the end of the day, you go and pay for the course and you only do maybe two modules and you abandon it, and because that's not your way of learning. So first things first, understand how you learn. So if you know how you learn, if you think you're the person who you like learning in an environment where there are other people, like in a class, you have a teacher or something like that, go for a boot camp. Go and sign up to a boot camp where you have somebody who is there for you, who's going to mentor you and guide you through to understand, you know, UX. And then if you feel like you're the type who you can learn by yourself, then you can take courses. So some of the courses that I took myself, I did take the Google UX course, very popular in the UX design community. Everybody talks about it. So I did take it, but taking it a step further from that, Interaction Design Foundation is a very good, I would say, good platform to learn UX design. So it does not teach you UI design, so you don't get to use Figma a lot, but you get to understand what design is, how to design better, you know, and all of those things. And then for your UI skill, they say practice makes improvement. For your UI skill, what you want to do is you go on YouTube and, you know, look at tutorials. There are lots of channels. Some channels that I will recommend personally, you can go to Design Plus Code. This is not a shout out to them or anything. I don't have any affiliation with this just platform that I'm calling. So just, it's not like they're paying me.
No, it's not an advert.
So they don't think like
you're an affiliate.
So you can go on Design. You can go on Design Plus Code, their YouTube, okay. Their free tutorials there. You can watch, if you're just a beginner, their beginner tutorials, you can watch them and learn how to use the tool. You can even go on YouTube, go to Figma page, the Figma YouTube page. They have tutorials, right? How to do certain things, how to build screen and all those kind of things. So you can go there and start watching those. They are free. They're basically free. That's how you get better at your UI. The truth about UI design is you have to design a lot to be good at it. That's just the truth. You have to see a lot of good design as well. You have to practice a lot to get better at it. So if you're starting out, you might, you know, some people will say, oh, I don't know how to use auto layout. Oh, I don't know how to do this thing. You really literally have to be doing it like frequently for you to get better at it. So I think I've balanced it. Your UI, go to YouTube, go and practice. And then for your UX, you can take a course or join a bootcamp. So that way you are balanced on both ends.
Yeah.
For your product design.
I love
design.
What you said about practice doesn't make perfect. It makes improvements. So keep practicing. Like, practice not because you want to get perfect, but because you want to improve. So that when you look back next, like a month after, you're like, okay, I think I've improved. Things that I used to struggle with, you no longer struggle with it. I think it applies to everything. Because even for me, when I was learning how to code, I realized that if I leave coding and, you know, I don't code for maybe a week or two or three, I've forgotten some things. I go to CSS, I'm like, oh, how am I supposed to lay out this thing? And I'm like, okay. I'm googling and trying to figure out what's the CSS property. But the more you do it, is the more you get used to it, and you know, it just becomes part of you. So for you, did you join a bootcamp, or it was just self-learned, the product design journey?
I'm self-taught. Everything I do is always, I want to figure it out myself. I'm that kind of person. I'm not really the, I want to be in a class kind of thing. I did try bootcamp once, but it was not for design. It was for front-end development, full stack engineering. So that was during the pandemic. I was trying to attend this class. I would go for the class, and after 3 days, I was like, this thing is not for me. They were just talking and giving assignment. I'm like, no.
it's really important. It's good, because I feel like it's important to really be honest with yourself. Like, it's important for people to be honest with themselves and know what they are truly interested in. Like, not just doing stuff because it's popular or because everyone is doing it. Like, what exactly do you want to do? What ticks for you? What's your interest? And even those that are coming into any field of tech, whether it's product design, web development, you know, just stick to it. It's not going to be easy. That's the truth. There are times that you'll feel like, okay, what am I doing? But it's important to just ensure that whatever path you choose, just stick to it. And if you practice, it'll become easier. It gets easier by the day. That's why I say it's not easy, but it gets easier by the day. And now you launched your...
I like what you said.
Yeah, thank you.
I like what you said, because, you know, people come into design and they think it's the easy tech role to do because it's not coding. And then, you know, after maybe 3 months, 6 months, maybe you finally get an internship position, and then you're now faced with the real product, you know, to build an entire app by yourself. And then you realize that it's no longer those 3 screens, 4 screens I was doing during my bootcamp, or, you know, that I was creating. This is like an entire product. An entire product that I have to handle. And so it gets difficult, but like you said, I mean, if you keep doing it, you get to improve and you get better at it. So
yeah, you get better at it.
I like what you said.
Yeah. Now you've launched your first Figma plugin.
Congratulate you,
because I checked it out and it was really fun. I like the flexibility that it provides. I think it's called Text Bender. Right? Text Bender. Yeah, so just tell me more about it in terms of what made you want to create the plugin, and what was that like? Because I know that it involves a bit of coding, you know, ensuring that it works, also the development part. So how was navigating through all of that like?
The reason I'm laughing is because it's really it's funny, but I did write an entire article on this. It's on my Medium page. It's also on my DevTool page. Like, yo, I built a Figma plugin. I built my first Figma plugin. So for those people who want to get all the nitty gritty and all the gist and everything, the full gist is there. But I'll just give us maybe a little bit of the summary here. So basically, I've always wanted, I've always wanted to create, like, you know, things for the community, because I'm somebody who likes to give back, whether it's in design, whether it's in mentorship and stuff. So I always want to do something that benefits other people. And what happened with that plugin was that, you know, I saw a post online, basically, and it was about a guy, a man who was talking about, oh, he's not going to hire designers who cannot code. So when I saw the post, I was like, okay, I've seen this post, you know, this kind of topic over and over and over again. So I quoted the tweet, and it was on Twitter. I quoted the tweet. I was like, ah, this discussion, we're having it over and over. It's old already. It's outdated. And so, long story short, while we're having that back and forth, and you know how Twitter, Twitter is, right? Someone asked me, like, I did mention, like, in the post that, we now have AI, right? Mm-hmm. So as somebody, I have a coding background, but even at that, I'm not somebody who enjoys coding or something like that. So I feel like with AI, you know, when I say AI, I'm talking about like the LLMs, like ChatGPT, Claude, and all the rest. You know, you can use these to create things, because I have seen people who have created tools with those platforms, right? So there are designers that I follow, one of which is Meng Tho. He's a designer. He's a Korean designer that I follow. I even watch he teaches and all of that. I think I've mentioned his YouTube channel in this in this stuff before. Design Plus Code. Okay. So I've seen him. He builds a lot of things with AI, and he shares it a lot. I follow him, and so I've seen those things before. And I was like, oh, this is AI is really helping people to build a whole lot of things right now, that as a designer, you don't really need to know everything, like know how to hard code everything. Once you have the basics, you can go and build. And so someone was like, what have you built with AI, Nabel?
Massive challenge.
So I was like, okay. This is a good question, actually. It was a motivation. I wouldn't say it was just a challenge. It was more like a motivation. I was like, what have you actually built? Like, it's not all talk. Go and do something, you know? So I just took it by the side, and I remember writing it down, because I always have sticky notes. I'm talking to you. I have sticky notes around my table. So I know I wrote it down, like, oh, I'm going to build something with this AI thing, and I stick it there. I was designing something for work, and I was looking for a plugin to help me do something on Figma. So I went to Figma community, and I was looking for plugins. Now, I don't know how I came across this particular plugin for whatever reason. I don't even know how, but I sure went to the comment section, and they were dragging the plugin, you know, and they were like, ah, this tool is not working, and it's paid, and this and that. I'm like, okay, why don't I create something similar but better? Right, I even have a plugin I'm thinking of creating right now for my own work, for my own workflow and all of that. So that was how the whole text bender thing came about. Now, building it is a different story altogether. It was not an easy thing to do, but the good part is I had my AI assistants, like I mentioned. I was using ChatGPT, I was using Claude AI to literally write the code for me, run the code, and test it and everything. Like you said, it involves coding. Mm-hmm. But that's how Text Bender came to be. And I hope this story is funny to anybody who listens to it, but at the same time, learn something from it, because I learned something from it. I learned, like, I could do anything that I put my mind to, basically. And the second thing is that, you know, I've done it before, and I can do it again. So I've built a tool before. I can build another tool for my, whether it's for my own workflow or for, you know, other people. I think that's basically
how long did it take you to build it from start to finish?
It took me a week.
Oh, that was fast.
It took me a week.
That was fast.
That's because there's AI, right? So I did.
But even at that, so it was actually, too fast, because like it was determination, and you just ensuring that, okay, I push through and
Okay, so I started with the design first. So I did the designs myself and I was like, okay, this is what I want it to look like, the interface and stuff. I want this to be the radios and all of that. So once I got the designs locked in, I already had the idea of how I wanted it to work. Now, the thing about coding with AI is you have to be as detailed as possible for you to get the results that you need, because it's garbage in, garbage out. Don't just go there and say, design a plugin for me that does
something
this.
That I gave hallucination.
I gave it a lot of context. I upload the photo. I explained all the things in the photo, like, okay, this the orange area is going to be the preview area where the user can see this, you know, basically going into detail as to explaining to the AI the expected result that I needed so that it can give me the code that I actually want. Yeah. So that's what I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good. I agree that AI has become part of our whole, you know, journey, both in life and, you know, even in work. Because for me, I still use AI. I use AI a lot in my work, not just coding, and literally almost everything, but particularly coding. What I use AI for is to debug. If I write a code and it's not working, I take it back to ChatGPT and I'm just like, okay, why is this code not working? How can I make this code better? Or how can I make this code cleaner? And a lot of times it actually helps me. Like, in fact, even when I don't understand the code, maybe I'm checking a particular code base and I don't know what's going on there, I take it to ChatGPT and ChatGPT just explains. I'm like, okay, it's clever. So definitely I agree that, you know, these are times that people should lean into AI, because AI can really help you, right? You definitely you don't need to relinquish your own knowledge to AI, like your own what you need to do, but AI serves as, you know, a way to support and ensure that you have a smoother learning or work experience. So finally, Nabel, looking back at your entire design journey, your entire career progression, what's one experience that you would say has shaped your career the most, or has shaped you into the designer that you are today?
A lot of things have shaped me, one of which I would say teaching other people, mentoring other people. It someone told me this, I don't know, I can't remember who, but they said, when you teach other people, you learn twice. So in order for me to teach someone something about design or something that I know, it means that I have to go and study it, right? So that is something that's really helped to shape my career. I remember in 2022, I started teaching designs. I was doing like live classes. At the time, there was this platform called Lighthall. I'll be teaching other people. It used to keep me up late, because I will have to, the design that I want to teach the class, I must have done it like 10, 15 times. And so I remember my classes, sometimes people ask me like, how is it that you know that you have to do this thing, or you have to add 10% radius, or you have to, like, I have actually done it in a couple of times. So I feel like teaching other people and has really shaped me. Now, I know that I mentioned that for you to teach someone, you have to know it, but you don't have to know everything, because when I started teaching, I wouldn't say I knew a lot. In fact, I still don't know everything, but, you know, what I knew, I was teaching other people, and it helped me as well. And then the second is mentoring other people. So I know that with mentorship it's a little bit different, because people will come to you with different kind of questions, not just how to design, but how to maybe navigate their work environment and stuff like that. And so my experience has also, you know, hearing other people's story and sharing my experience has been something that has really helped me, I think, a lot. And then the third one would be just basically sharing, like sharing in terms of, it could be resource, it could be my experience, and sharing in terms of writing, right? So writing has really helped me as a designer. I feel like I'm a better designer because I used to say I'm not a writer, but now I've owned it and I say I'm a writer. So because it has really helped me. Sometimes I go back to my own stuff. If I want to write a new case study, I will open my old case studies, and I will look at the way that I've written those words. I'm like, okay, this is how I like writing my own stuff. Okay, this is how I'm going to do it. So I feel like my own writing and my own things that I've done in the past has also helped me and has also shaped my career. Yeah. So those are the three. I think you said one.
Three is fine. I'm sure it's very useful to those listening or watching. I like what you said about teaching people, because a lot of times you think that you have to know everything before you teach, and you do not have to know everything. The way I see teaching people is everyone is at different stages, right? So if you're at stage two, there's someone that is on stage zero and stage one that they need the knowledge. In fact, it's very useful because, you know, a lot of time if you're on stage 10, you probably overwhelm the person that is at stage one with all the knowledge that you have. But if you're just at stage two, you just teach them what they need to go from stage one to stage two, and that way even you yourself, you are learning more and you're gaining the confidence, you're understanding how to communicate with others. And you know, so don't wait till you know everything, right? Wherever you are, be confident that you can teach someone. I think I didn't really know that when I first started, you know, web development. I was like, I just know very little, just, you know, very little JavaScript and all. But then the more I shared what I knew, the more I created content, I realized that I was getting better. And even the, I would say the code that wasn't so clean, because I used to feel like all those code masters would come for me and say that, oh, my code isn't clean, I should have done it this way, this is not the best function to write. But even at that, right, there were other people that were still behind and felt like, okay, this is helping me. So I think to just emphasize what you said, don't wait till you know everything before you start teaching, because it will help your career a lot. So Nabil, before we wrap up,
you said something,
go for it.
You said something that really I think it resonates a lot with design. And you said you know, the code that you write, maybe it might not be perfect, and you know, the code masters or the people who are more might feel like, oh, they're going to come for me. I feel like this is something that also happens in design, and it makes people to not share or push themselves back. So it's like, my design is not perfect, I can't post it.
True.
Oh, my work is not, it's, you know, I can't share it. You're not sharing your work, you're not putting, I can't do it, I can't put myself out there because I'm waiting for it to be like so designer. I want to be like this person before I start. No, you're just holding yourself back. So I feel like this is something that happens to designers as well, right? So you feel like, I'm not sharing my work, I can't even teach somebody else because maybe I don't know a lot, or I don't even know anything. Or and the reason for that, I'll say maybe because of the tech space and Twitter spaces, because you know, people are afraid of dragging.
Yes, like they don't want you to come for them. I can totally relate. I struggle really too, because I don't want you to come up for me. Just leave me.
Just leave me alone. But I feel like I know that we're all personally, I'm also scared, not like I'm scared of dragging, but I don't really like problem. Mm-hmm. Like I don't,
no one set really yourself like up for drags.
I don't just want but the truth is this is something I'm also telling myself as well. You just need to don't give an F about people, what people are going to say at some point, and just share your stuff. Because sometimes you also need that criticism. Sometimes you also need that feedback to help you get better, right? I know that people can be salty, and even when you work, there's no flaw, they will look for flaw and find something to say. But you just need to put yourself out there, because you don't know who is watching. You don't know where your work is going to go. Because sometimes, you know, for some people who have heard things, and I've also been a part of it, I've also experienced it, that you share your work and somebody will reach out to you and be like, are you free? I have a job for you, right? So these are things that designers go through. When you mentioned it, I just started thinking about it, like,
Yeah, that's so good. I agree. And Nabil, this has been such a fun conversation. And I can't believe we spent almost an hour. Feels like we haven't spent so long a time. Yeah, it's about 57 minutes. This has been really nice. I've gained so much. I've, you know, enjoyed hearing your journey, your experiences, and I'm sure that anyone listening or watching will also gain many insights. So where can people reach you? Is there anything exciting that you're working on? I know you mentioned mentorship. Are you actively mentoring anyone now? Or is it like, is your mentoring session open?
Yeah, so on ADP list, for anyone who's listening, mm-hmm. if you want me to mentor you, designers only, please. So you can go on ADP list and just ADP list is spelled ADP, then list. List, L-I-S-T. Yeah, and you can just search for Nabel. So my name is spelled N-A-B-H-E-L. So Nabel.
Okay.
You can just search for it. I'm very sure you're going to see my profile pop up. Now, I have a lot of open slots. I don't think this month I have one active person that I've been mentoring. So I have a lot of open slots for so many people to come on and, you know, we can talk. We can get to hear your story and get to know how to help you. Now, my mentorship sessions, sometimes people come to me and like, oh, I want you to help me. My CV, my portfolio, you know, a second eye on it is going to help me. And so those are some of the things that I've done for people in the past and I keep doing. Aside from ADP list, you can reach out to me on basically any platform, like Twitter, anywhere. Like I'm on every platform. So yeah.
Awesome. So please go ahead, reach out to Nabel for her mentorship, because I'm sure that it will really help you. And, you know, the insights that she has had over the years will also point you in the right direction in your career. So thank you, Nabel, for everything you do in the community. This has been insightful. And thank you to you for watching and sticking to the end of this conversation. If you enjoyed it and if you learned a thing or two, feel free to drop that comment below. Till next time, I'll see you in another episode. Bye.
Bye.